You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Musqueam people. This is a 7-hour block of special programming in commemoration of National Aboriginal Day. Please stay tuned for interviews, documentaries, and music produced by, with, and for Indigenous folks here at CITR and beyond.
Hey, hey, hello. You're listening to CITR Docs Season 2. We're broadcasting from the ancestral and unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people here at UBC. Last year, we kicked off a documentary series encompassing various perspectives on UBC's history in light of the institution's centennial. This year, we are blowing it up to encompass community itself as a concept and all the various ways community can be interpreted. So over the next 6 weeks, we are going to be uploading 2 mini docs, miniature documentaries a week, Mondays and Wednesdays, on our CITR iTunes and Stitcher. For more information on this project, you can visit citr.ca/docs. There is one note before we continue. It's always worth keeping in mind that CITR, striving to provide a platform for community expression and underrepresented voices, is none the less a benefactor in a system of colonial expropriation. Nothing we do, no matter how ostensibly radical, exists outside of this context. So as we present further documentaries and strive to rethink the station, we must also think more about what our being here means, and the conception of space and land that is hidden violently when we think about space in a colonial society. The story you're about to hear is called A Fireside Chat with Julian Napoleon. It's produced by Mario Parent, and the title is very literal. You're going to be sitting down with Julian as he recounts a visceral experience with the meaning of Indigenous food sovereignty. Julian is a practiced storyteller, and if you let your mind's eye open, you're going to be with him everywhere he goes in this story. Stay tuned.
So, you know, I've been on this real long journey of, like, I need to go through this process myself. It's become this huge thing in my life, and you know, the past few years I've been trying, going out hunting a lot on my own, and I always appreciate that time out in the woods and the land and in my territory. There's this thing, and you've probably experienced it, but when for myself, when I go back to my territory and I'm out on the land, especially by myself, and I take that time to slow down, I can like feel the presence of my ancestors. And I know that sounds like some cheesy cliche thing to say, but like it is real. Like I can feel it, and it's so powerful. Sometimes I just have to like sit down and take some time and just feel it, because they're there, you know. We've been there since time immemorial, since the time before time. And how could you not feel that, you know, if you have an open heart and an open spirit and mind? It's right there.
CITR 101.9 FM. We began our story today with a reflection from Julian Napoleon, a student in the Faculty of Land and Food Systems at UBC. Julian is a member of the Working Group for Indigenous Food Sovereignty, and in our conversation about that, Julian shared a story on Denezaw food gathering and cross-cultural trade.
Essentially, what the Working Group on Indigenous Food Sovereignty is interested in is strengthening those relationships between Indigenous people and their respective landscapes, and also that kind of cross-cultural connection between different Indigenous groups. There's been a lot of work done in the area of revitalizing traditional trade routes, which is something that's super interesting to me, you know, working outside of this kind of techno-bureaucratic, neoliberal, capitalist imposition that all of us are forced to exist in, and just like connecting with our beautiful foods and sharing them across communities, I think is such a beautiful thing. So,
what does that look like to you in practice?
Well, you know, Mario, you showed up at my house today bringing some ulakan, which I know is such a significant part of your culture, and some beautiful canned sockeye. And, you know, immediately I feel that need for reciprocity and gave you some of my wild blueberry jam. You know, that actually brings me to a story I was meaning to share with you that goes hand in hand with that jam.
To help contextualize what Julian was talking about with regards to traditional trade routes extended throughout British Columbia as well along the coast. Between my people, the Niskat, Wulikin was traded down the Nass River as well as the Skeena, connecting with Julian's people, the Dene. Reciprocity represents a guiding principle amongst many First Nations, particularly around the exchange of goods. Now Julian's going to go into a story to discuss further his intimate relationship with the Dene Za territory.
So, I've been on this, I'm 32, so I'm not even really a youth anymore, although I still feel like one. Maybe an expanded, ever-evolving and expanding definition of a youth, maybe I am somewhere. So, you know, shout out to people expanding that definition.
Or at the very least, an elder in training, always. Yeah, I
like that. But I've been on this lifelong journey to get a moose. Because that really is, not only for Adonisa people, is that just this huge part of who we are. But it's this real rite of passage. And indeed, you know, everyone else in my family usually got their first moose when they were like a kid. And I've got plenty of deer but I never had this, you know, and I've been around with my uncles and my family, and been through that process of getting a moose and the ceremony that goes with it and the community distribution that goes with it and all that processing and celebration and bringing together a family and community, because it really is this big, big thing. It really, for me, since I was a little kid, has really been what defines who we are and what we do. Anyway, I'm going off on another side tangent here, but back to the story. This past summer, I was back home and my little brother Dakota was there, Asinu Mustus, and him and I were hunting together every day with my dad, Art. And I got a nice buck on the first day of hunting, a nice little spike fork buck, and once I butchered it up, I realized, ooh, you know, it's delicious, and I was so grateful, but it's not too much meat. So we decided to keep hunting because the whole extended family needed meat. And now, you know, it's people really turn to me, so not only do I have that personal desire, but there's that expectation. So we kept hunting every day for over a week, and we didn't see a single moose, you know, because the moose numbers are down, the moose are suffering, and that alone is kind of problematic for me, but we still have to honor that relationship. I think it's a part of it. As odd as it may sound, I feel like that's a part of sustainability for us in the moose, is to honor our relationship in that way. So it might seem counterintuitive, but that's a whole other dialogue. Anyway, whole week hunting hard, didn't see anything. And finally I gave up. I gave up completely. I just let go. I said, you know what? This isn't the year. I need to do self-work, I need to do ceremony, I need to do prayer, I need to do offerings, and I need to get to that place where I'm deserved of that honor of having a moose come and offer itself to me, because in our Dene Za teachings, it's the animal that offers itself to you. It's not so much to do with your skill and ability, although that does play into it somewhat, but the real essence of that tradition of hunting is based on you being a good enough person and following your teachings in a way that the animals believe that they should offer themselves to you. So it's just really, it's a beautiful thing, I think, and I felt, wow, I got a lot of work to do still before I could get to that place, and I let go completely. And the next morning, my uncle called me up, my Uncle Tom, and he said, hey, I found this incredible patch of blueberries, like, they're just hanging, and there's so much up there, and we got to go pick today. we probably won't see anything up there. There's not a lot of moose up there, but we'll just go pick berries. And, you know, since I had let go of hunting, it's like, yeah, of course. And we were having a fun time. We picked just tons of blueberries. Just like he said, we got up there, and they were just the thickest I've ever seen. And we were in this one spot all day, just joking, telling stories, laughing, by no means being quiet. And it was kind of drizzling rain and late summer day in the north. And at the end of the day, we were just sitting in the truck and having a thermos of tea. And then the big, beautiful, dry cow moose just walked up right in front of us and stood there and looked at me. And I knew, you know, that was the time. That was the moment. And I got her. And, you know, from there the work started. But it was like the real significance of that for me was I went through this transition internally of letting go. Of letting go of that need to kill an animal. And instead getting to a place of just being out on the land with my family and just being who we're supposed to be and doing what we're supposed to do and being out there and celebrating being out there. And it was when I went to that place that she came to me. And I just really, like, I've been reflecting on that so much, and I feel like it's somehow encapsulates a part of our identities, our worldview. Anyway, the blueberry jam I gifted you when you arrived, it was from the berries that I picked that day.
That was Julian Napoleon, a student in the Faculty of Land and Food Systems at UBC and a member of the Working Group for Indigenous Food Sovereignty. In the story, Julian develops a working relationship with the land and comes to an understanding of Dene'eza worldview. In that worldview, Julian helps to articulate a reciprocal relationship between his self, the land, and the moose. To conclude, this was a radio documentary on Indigenous food sovereignty highlighting Dene'eza practices and worldview. This is Mario from the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded and ancestral territory of the Hunkaminium-speaking Musqueam people.
You just heard a doc from Mario Parent. It's called A Fireside Chat with Julian Napoleon. You can hear it again on CITR's iTunes and Stitcher. You can also find it online at citr.ca/docs. Mario is a member of CITR's Indigenous Collective. Their show is called Unceded Airwaves, and as a part of Season 2 of Unceded Airwaves, Mario recently interviewed Julian Napoleon for an episode on food sovereignty, so check out that episode and the show as a whole if you want to dive further into these issues. You can find all the essential work the Indigenous Collective does here at CITR by looking up Unceded Airwaves at citr.ca. For the next episodes from our CITR documentary Series 2, search for CITR Docs on Stitcher and iTunes, or check out citr.ca/docs. Episodes release Mondays and Wednesdays. Here's a preview of this upcoming Monday's release. It's called Lamo and the Princess.
My family, there's a lot of llamas picture. Left side, there's a Buddha statue. That's from Buddh Gaya. That's holy place. Then there's another llama. He's a very famous Gamabha Rinpoche.
A Rinpoche is a Buddhist spiritual leader. Buddhism is an almost inseparable part of Tibetan culture, but Lamo is especially devout. Her home has prayer flags, sure, but it also has photos of famous lamas and Rinpoche. It has Buddhist tapestries, known as tankas, and statues brought back from pilgrimages to India. She even has a prayer room in her home. It's just down the hall from where we sit.
And I have lots of tanka in my prayer room, my favorite room. I'm not praying myself. I'm praying for everybody. And everybody have a good life. Everybody have a good educate. And I pray like that all the time.
Today, Lamo is content with her life. Her four children have grown up healthy and educated. She has a husband, friends. She's part of a Tibetan dance group and goes for long walks. But things weren't always like this. Lhamo prays for others, that they're met with compassion and kindness, that they have a better life than she's had. I'm Alex DeBoer. This is Lhamo and the Princess.